Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr, and you are listening to Fiber Talk, that twice-weekly podcast for people who make fine art with needle and thread. And we have to do the fine art part. We can't stab ground cloth because we have a guest this week. Christine's not here, since she didn't speak up, but paying job thing. But we do have a guest, Shayna Ben-Hayoun. Did I get that right?
Yes, you did. How are you?
I'm just fine. See, there it is. Once again, you know, from the professional, ask before the show starts, and then you get the name right.
Yes.
So Shayna and Shayna's company, Designing Painting Canvases, is SBT Stitches.
That's right.
Yes. And so so I learned, now when you look this up, you're going to come up with Shayna Brooke and Shayna Brooke Tauber?
Yes.
Yes. That's where the SBT comes from.
My maiden name is Shayna Brooke Tauber, and I kind of made it my identity that my initials SBT took over everything. My license plate on my car is SBT.
Okay.
So everything in my life was SBT, and so it was only appropriate that I named my company that, not knowing that I was going to get married. And then my initials changed. So now I'm SBB, but my company was already branded, so I left the SBT.
Okay. Then she up and got married. Man.
Yeah, I know.
Happens. It does happen. Yep. Yeah. So, okay. Now this fourth generation stitcher, tell about that, because, you know, most people learn from their mother or their grandfather or grandmother, but four generations, that's a powerful string in a family.
Yeah, so my great-grandmother, who is from Poland, she used to needlepoint, and she used to do, you know, the very old-school needlepoints, the chair covers and, you know, the big, big pieces. And I knew my grandmother. She passed away when I was about – sorry, I knew my great-grandmother. She passed away when I was about 4 years old. And I remember her stitching, and I remember her having a huge needlepoint collection in her room because she lived with my grandparents. And then when she passed away, my grandmother was kind of a busybody, and she never really sat down to stitch, but she knew how to stitch. And I remember when I was about 8 years old, she took me to – there was a local needlepoint store near my house, and she took me there, and she wanted to teach me how to needlepoint. And she bought me, like, a very beginner's canvas, and we sat by the pool, and she tried to teach me how to stitch. And I just – it wasn't the right time for me to learn how to stitch. And I couldn't get it, and I put the piece down, and I never picked it up again. And, you know, fast forward 15 years, my grandmother got – sick, and she was in the hospital, and we would go and visit her every day. And I would go, and my two aunts, the daughters of my grandmother, would be there, and one of them would sit there and needlepoint all day. And so I asked her when we were sitting there, I said, "Can you teach me how to needlepoint?" And the next day she brought me a little canvas, and I learned how to needlepoint sitting in the hospital with my grandmother every day, which was kind of ironic that it was the end of her life, but it was a time where I was able to continue on a tradition from my family. So it really meant a lot to me to learn at that point in my life.
That's really great. So your great-grandmother, do you still have some of the stuff that she did?
Yes.
Outstanding. Because that's, yes, that's like a basket weave with wool and the whole bit, huh?
You know, funny enough is that she used to do fancy stitches. Looking back on
really?
Some of her stuff, yeah, I mean, a lot of it is basket weave, but there are some fancy stitches in there. And I was shocked once I learned, you know, the fancier stitches, and I'm looking at this and I'm like, wow, she was really advanced.
Go great grandmother.
Yeah, but she did make all of her great grandchildren. We all have big pieces with our names on it. So I have those pieces. I have two of them with my name on it from her. And then after my grandmother died and we went through and cleaned out the apartment, I went through the needlepoint stash and took a bunch of canvases, and I still have those.
Yeah, you're darn right you took those canvases. Boy, I'd have them in a heartbeat, yes.
I mean, nobody else in my family was trying to claim them, so I took them all.
Oh, yeah. I made it many, many, many years ago. I did a business trip to Europe and went into a needlework store and bought the standard basket of flour needlepoint thing on Penelope. Was her stuff on Penelope or on standard canvas?
It was on standard canvas.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
I just wondered, because that's what they had in this store. And it was in Switzerland, I think. No, it was Austria. And it was mostly Penelope. And so I just wondered if that was the standard thing or not.
Yeah, no, hers was on regular, you know, plain needlepoint canvas. And she actually, there was a couple pieces when I went through after my grandmother died, and there was a couple pieces that she had never finished. And it was funny to see how she stitched, because she stitched a basket weave, so everything was always on the angle. But it was like little bits and pieces of angles everywhere. It wasn't like a continuous flow. And I'm very anal when I stitch my, you know, my canvases and basket weave, that I continue the line. And she was just kind of all over the place with her stitching, so it was really interesting to see.
That's great. Have the colors held up?
Yes. Actually, I took... One of the pieces I took after my grandmother passed away was, it's like a tree in a forest, a single tree. It's kind of spooky. It's framed, and I had it reframed because the frame that she put it in was not my frame of choice. And, you know, and it looks great. It looks like it was just stitched, you know, this year. It's really in great condition.
Oh, that's fantastic. Boy, just to have that kind of stuff. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah,
what a
it's
treasure.
Really, really special. Yeah.
Oh,
it
yeah.
is really special. And, you know, my grandmother, although she didn't stitch very much, she did stitch me a pillow for my bat mitzvah when I was 13. And I look at it, and in the corner, which is something my great grandmother always did, is that she stitched her name in the corner in the year that it was made. And uh-huh. so I've continued that. I don't stitch it. I usually have it embroidered on the back of the pillow when it's being finished. But I think it's really nice to put the dates on things so that, you know, one day when I'm not here, maybe my great-great-grandchildren will be looking at these needlepoint pillows saying, you know, my great-great-grandmother made this for me in 2018.
Yeah. So. That's a, you know, that brings up a question. The Jewish faith, we see a lot of people who stitch different things for different events in the Jewish faith and in Jewish life. Is that almost a standard thing, or is that just because we see stitchers doing it?
I think it's as standard as the Christmas ornaments.
Okay. You know? Well, that, yeah. Okay. That's what I was getting to, I guess. Yeah. Okay.
Every single year, I beg my husband to let me have a Christmas tree just so I can decorate it with Christmas ornaments. And I've yet to get my Christmas tree, but, you know, I think it's really, you know, anything that's has to do with faith or religion and that can mark a certain time is really special. You know, like when my niece was born, I stitched her a pillow with her name on it to carry on the tradition from my great grandmother of stitching something with everybody's name on it when they're born. And I put the date on the back. So, you know, when she looks at it, when she's older, she can say, you know, this was from when I was born. And I didn't make it all like babyish with little teddy bears or whatever. Like I made it just a normal pillow so that it never gets outdated.
Oh, that's excellent. That's so cool. See, that kind of stuff is so neat that you have that going through the family generation after generation. It really ties everybody together. That's fantastic.
Yeah. I can't wait till my niece is old enough and I can teach her how to needlepoint. so then my sister-in-law will stop asking me for needlepoints.
Yeah, do your own.
Yeah.
Yeah. So your grandma, you learned that, and then your mother stitched too?
So my great grandmother, my grandmother, and my aunts are all from my father's side. Nobody on my mother's side stitches. So my dad does not stitch, but his house is also covered in needlepoints.
Whether he wants it or not. Huh?
Exactly.
Oh, that's fantastic. I love that stuff. It goes, you know, carries through.
I think it's really special.
Yeah. So when you started stitching, in that hospital, what were you learning? What was it? Do you remember?
I learned a basket weave. That was the first stitch I learned. And I like couldn't grasp the concept of it. And so I would do like two stitches and then I would show it to my aunt and I'd be like, I think I messed up. And then she would go and take it out and redo it for me. And I really just couldn't grasp the concept of it. I somehow finished the pillow, and looking back on it, I gave it to my dad. I can't even remember at this moment what it says on it, but it has a cute little saying on it. And I look back at the pillow every time I go to my dad's house, and I was like, God, I was such a horrible stitcher back then. You know, all my stitches are so uneven. But there's a local needlepoint store. I live in Miami, and so we have a local needlepoint shop here. And my aunt, who taught me how to stitch, took me to the store, and they had a beginner's class, and I signed up for the beginner's class. And I was in college at the time, and I went to the beginner's class, and I learned so much. And I came out of I think it was two different classes I took, and I came out the other end of those classes, and I knew more than my aunts knew. Ooh. And then they started turning to me, and they're like, well, teach us this stitch, and, you know, how do we do this? And I want want to learn that. And so, it, you know, I started teaching them as opposed to them teaching me, which was really cool.
Ooh, turned it around.
Yeah, I turned it around on them.
Ah, that's great.
Yep, younger and smarter. No, I'm just
kidding. Young whippersnappers. So, stitched in college then, obviously. You have a group that stitched, or were you just kind of a solo stitcher?
So my first beginner's class, I made one of my friends come to with me, and she learned how to stitch, but she never carried through with it. But when I went to college, I went to University of Miami, and I lived at home, and I lived an hour away from the campus, and the local needlepoint store was about 15 minutes away from the campus. And I had, like, you know, 3-hour breaks and 4-hour breaks between classes. So instead of going home, I would just go to the store and sit there and stitch.
That ain't fair.
I know. I wish I had that kind of time today to go and do that.
No kidding.
I learned so much just sitting there. You know, it was all the old ladies that would come because they didn't work, so they would be there all day long, and they would really teach me. You know, if there was something I didn't know, they would tell me, like, just simple things. You know, the when you do a basket weave, how it depends if it which. I don't even know how to put this in words, you know, if it's an over or under, you know, which stitch goes on what.
Right.
I don't know if that makes sense. I don't know how to put that into words. You know, they taught me simple things like that, that I would have never known. And that it really makes a difference in the stitch. So I really picked up a lot of good little tricks, you know, in college when I was doing that. And being in college, this is actually how I started designing, was I couldn't afford needlepoint canvases. It's a very expensive hobby.
Right.
And so I would sit in the store, and one day I just asked the owner of the store. She was designing a canvas for somebody else who had ordered, like, a custom whatever. And I said to her, can you teach me how to design? And it probably sucked for her, because then I stopped buying canvases for her. But she taught me how to design, and the first thing I ever painted was my name in Hebrew. I never stitched the canvas. I got so excited about designing canvases that I just never got around to stitching it. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. So that's a real special arrangement there, where breaks between classes. See, I just went back to the room and took a nap.
Yeah.
I'd like to say I went back and studied to make maximum use of my time, but no, that didn't happen.
There was lots of car naps also that occurred.
Yes. But that's absolutely ideal. Plus, it's a mental break. You know, that's the thing I've asked many people about in stitching in college, is what a mental break and what a complete release from studies.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yes. I think, you know, and that's a big part of my company, is I think it's really important for young people to learn how to stitch. It's the best stress reliever there is.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I mean, I think everybody would tell you that any age would tell you that that's the, you know, the end of the day, to sit down and you just feel it just flow out of you as you stitch, and your mind is released. And yeah, it's there's a real therapy thing that happens there.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. So you teach me how to design so I don't buy your canvases.
Right.
And then you started painting?
So she taught me how to design. I designed that first one with my name on it, and I painted it. And then.
What was that experience? What was that first experience like painting?
Well,
just how messy was it?
You know, actually, I still have the canvas in my, you know, box of canvases that I don't touch. And it's a good canvas.
Is it?
I think it's on 18 count. And, you know, Hebrew letters are pretty straight. There's not much curvature to them. So it was just a lot of lines.
Oh, okay.
But I think the most frustrating part about that first one I designed is because, you know, and as you go, you adapt your own ways of doing things. But the way that shop owner taught me how to do it was that you take the design. She at the time had a book of Hebrew fonts.
Oh.
And she gave me the book, and she gave me a piece of graph paper. And she said, okay, so first you chart it out on the graph paper to get everything lined up. That took me about 2.5 hours to get it onto the graph paper because the dots were so small. And, you know, so much counting. And she's like, okay, now that you have that, now you have to dot it onto the canvas. And that took me another 2 hours. And I was like, this is a very long process. I was like, I don't know how I feel about this. I'm a very impatient person, which is funny because that doesn't usually go hand in hand with stitching.
No.
But I'm actually a very impatient person. I'm the kind of stitcher that's working on like 10 projects at a time because I just get so bored of stitching the same thing. So I'm always switching it up. But so that was the hardest part for me, was, you know, the time it took to get it on the canvas. And so I've had to figure out a way to do it quicker. And I learned that if you don't jot it on the graph paper first, that you save 2 hours. And it was a lot of trial and error, because then I was finishing canvases and realizing that they weren't, you know, even or whatever it was. But then I kind of adapted my own way to it, and it worked. I looked online for a lot of charts on different designs, and I just started practicing with those.
Hmm. Yeah. So because I'm intrigued by the painting part.
Is it,
you know, because you, a lot of your designs have lots of solid space, which I like, because then you can actually develop a stitch. But do we have a bunch of brushes with acrylic paints?
Okay, so I use acrylic paint. I typically use the Americana acrylic paint. They come in little bottles. I have hundreds of colors. and I have a big Ziploc filled with all different paintbrushes. I think I use two paintbrushes. Of all my paintbrushes that I have, I use two.
What are the rest of them for? Oh, I just have them.
I just have them. No, I'm going to tell you. It's because I ruin all my paintbrushes. Because what happens I'll tell you. I use a very thin paintbrush. I like to do 18 count. Majority of my canvases are 18 count. I just think stitches look more beautiful on 18 count. And so I have a very thin brush, and for a canvas that has words on it, I outline the letters first with a thin brush, and then I take a thicker brush and I paint in the middle.
Okay.
But what I do is, like I said, I'm very impatient. I have, you know, crazy ADD. So I'll be painting and the phone will ring. So I'll throw the paintbrush in the cup of water so that the paint doesn't dry on it. And I'll get up to go answer the phone. And then I forget about my paintbrush. And I come back 2 hours later and my paintbrush is ruined. So that is why I have so many paintbrushes.
Okay.
But I use acrylic paint. You know, it's really easy to paint with. I've learned tricks from other needlepoint designers. I talk to some other designers and I pick people's brains. Jessica from Lissette Designs was the first person whose brain I picked, and she really, really helped get me started in this field, because I didn't know anything. My first order from a shop came from San Francisco, and I painted all the canvases myself. And I was texting her and I'm like, how do you do this? This is crazy. And she was like, no, you need to hire a painting service.
yeah. So, the way I do it is I don't.
Right, exactly. So she definitely helped get me on that road.
Yeah, we had her on, had her on a show. She's terrific. Yeah.
Yeah, she's great. She actually doesn't live so far away from me, but I haven't been able to meet her in person yet. But,
oh, why?
I will at the market, which I'm excited for.
Yeah. Well, that's okay. So the other question I always have with painters: how do you prevent the holes from getting filled up? What's the trick there?
So I used to keep a straw next to me, and if the holes got filled, I would just blow the straw through the thing. I've learned that if the holes get filled, it means that there's too much paint on your brush. So typically I'll wipe some paint off the tip of the brush, like on my, paper plate or something. That's usually what I put my paint on. And I'll just keep brushing over the hole until the paint comes out, because that way also what really bothers me when I paint sometimes, and I've learned this the hard way, is you have to do two coats at least, because if not, you see the white dots through the canvas and it looks bad. And I'm really picky about it. And so if the paint gets stuck in the hole, that means that you're not going to see a white dot through that. So I just kind of get as much paint out as I can until the hole opens. And that's how I do it.
Okay. So basically it's an experience thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely.
You get better at it. You don't put so darn much paint on the canvas. Okay.
Right. Well, in the beginning I used to just blow on the canvas, and then I was like spitting all over the canvas, and it was just a disaster. So that's when I developed the straw. I know that some people use, I don't know if you know Kim from Kimberly Ann Needlepoint. She's also another, you know, quote unquote mentor of mine in this. But she uses, you know, like the stuff that you spray your keyboard with, like the dust thing.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah. She uses
canned air. Yes.
Yeah. So that's what she uses. So, okay. You know, everybody adapts their own methods.
Yeah. Okay. I just find the whole thing fascinating. I don't think I'd ever paint a canvas, but it's just interesting the technique because there's a real precision that has to be there or the stitcher gets frustrated.
Yes. It's funny because when I first started to paint, I did it so that I could stitch my own designs and I wouldn't have to pay for canvases, like I mentioned. But I think it's gotten to the point where I almost enjoy painting the canvases more than I do stitching. Like right now, I don't have any projects that I'm stitching, which is like the first time in forever. So that's really interesting.
That's not unusual. Other people that do painted canvases, I would say 75% of them don't stitch their own canvases.
Yeah.
Yeah. If they have a model, they have someone else do it.
Yeah, exactly. So that was the other thing. I had painted a bunch of models. And then, like I said, I'm going to Destination Dallas in a couple of weeks. And so I wanted to bring samples of my designs. You know, I have a lot of custom work that I'm bringing with me, but I wanted samples of my own designs stitched. And I sent them out to be stitched to other people because I didn't think that I was going to have the patience to stitch them myself. Because my brain is constantly thinking of new designs. I have a list in my phone of all new quotes and sayings and stuff. Most of my designs are sayings. So I'm always, you know, on the hunt for a new saying to paint onto a canvas.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. We see that because you try to appeal to the younger crowd and attract younger stitchers. And it seems to be that these sayings are what makes it work for younger people. And I have to confess, I don't understand that. What is the attraction with stitching sayings? Is it?
You know, I don't even know how to answer that. I love quotes. You know, I think quotes are a great way to express yourself. You know, little sayings. I always am saying little sayings and stuff. And I guess I was always on the search for quotes. You know, before I learned how to design, I would go into, you know, how needlepoint stores are, you know, categorized with each canvas.
Yeah.
So I was always looking for the drawer with the quotes and the sayings. That was always my first stop. And I think that's a big reason why I do quotes is because I never was able to find what I wanted. I love doing names, probably from my great grandmother that, you know, got passed down to me. I love stitching names. I do. The other thing is, you know, and I have to confess is I'm not like, if you give me a piece of paper and a pencil, I can't draw like if my life depended on it, you know,
I would have thought you had.
I'm putting myself out there. I can't even draw a circle. I was trying to draw a map for somebody today, and I couldn't even draw a circle. It was pretty embarrassing. so I do use a software on my computer that helps me graph them out. And, you know, I am very good at graphic design, though. I can draw on the computer, just not on a piece of paper. So I think that also comes in handy with designing my canvases.
All right.
You sound let down.
No. I find the art aspect really interesting because all of you artist people go at it in different ways. And it's interesting to me how it comes out of your head and how it gets translated. Cause it seems like everybody has a different thing, but you all seem to have this buildup of ideas that you can't get down on canvas fast enough.
Yes, it's true. I have so many designs that I'm trying to get out right now, especially to bring to the market with me, of new quotes that I have. And like I said, I'm constantly thinking of new things to put, you know, why I do try and, you know, in my more recent designs, I have been trying to incorporate, some more like actual designs of, art more than words. I mix them together. I also like to use, you know, ladylike profanity is how I'll put it.
Okay.
You know, I'm not, you know, I don't put just like the F-bomb or like, you know, a gruesome word, but I put it in a very tactical way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that also attracts the younger generation because, you know, we like curse words. we use it in our everyday language. It's more, you know, back, you know, when my great grandmother was stitching, to stitch something with a curse word was frowned upon, you know, people. And let me tell you there, I'm part of the Needlepoint Facebook group. I forget what it's called, Needlepoint Nation.
Yes.
And I had posted one of my designs in there that has the F word in it. And I said, what do you guys think of this design? And I got so much hate on that picture because all these old ladies couldn't understand how a curse word was in a needlepoint. And, you know, I think the picture ended up getting taken down because it caused so much controversy in the Needlepoint Facebook group. But, you know, that's why I try and cater to all different ages. But my designs are definitely very modern.
Yeah, no, that word in that group, yep, has stirred up more.
Yes.
and you know, it's really just a matter of just move on. You know, yes. If you don't like it, just move on. Or right. or it's Facebook, you can block the person.
Right.
You know, it's because that's the thing. I mean, it's not my cup of tea, but it's also another aspect of needlework. And yeah. You know, if you go looking for needlework off color or whatever, there is a whole world of stitchers out there who do that kind of stuff all the time.
Yes.
And who is it? Is it Helen Mirren? I think it's Helen Mirren.
I'm pretty sure who is
famous for stitching. I'm pretty sure it's her stitching and famous for stitching profane words, needlepoint.
Yeah.
It's just what appeals to people. Everybody has their thing. And, it's definitely a break with the tradition. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. Yes. I think it was my cousin who also stitches. I think she was the one who was the first person who was like, can you paint me a canvas with, I don't even remember what curse word I put on it for her. And then she's like, you should do a whole line of all the curse words.
I said, my wife and I, you know, this is older people stuff, but, we're both editors and we love watching Wheel of Fortune. Because we're editors and words are what we do all day long. And,
right.
And so it appeals to us. And I have said more than once, I would just kill to have one show of Wheel of Fortune with just profanity and off color clues and all kinds of, cause I just think it'd be a real hoot.
Yeah. It's super fun. It's super lighthearted. You know,
Goody Two Shoes, Pat and Vanna doing,
Right. Yeah, I probably wouldn't, stitch one of my designs for, my parents with the curse word in it, but I would definitely give one to my, actually for my best friend's birthday, I made her one with the word bitch in it. That was great.
Uh-huh.
Loved it.
So yeah. when it comes to young people, when we talk about young people, what are you attracting or what are you connecting with? College age or people who are out of college? Where does the young start?
I've never thought about where it starts. I think it's as young as, as somebody can stitch. I think I have some new designs that have like donuts and stuff in it. And I think that's super cute for a little girl to stitch when she's learning or a beginner piece. I have some pieces with hearts on it that are 13 count that are definitely good beginner pieces. So I don't think it's a matter of, how young do they start. I think it's right now it's the older generation accepting the younger, newer designs into the stores and into, their lives. Because when I started reaching out to stores, I literally just started cold calling stores and saying, listen, I'm a new designer. I would love to send you a copy of my catalog and let me know what you think, whether you want to buy them or not. I just want feedback. And I had some stores that bought my canvases, and then I had some stores that called me back and said, listen, we love your designs. We just don't think that it's going to sell. They were like, that's not our customer. So, I've gotten it from every angle.
Yeah. Yeah, not your customer, but maybe it needs to be.
Right.
To have.
Maybe you need to cater to the younger generation because your customer right now is not going to live forever.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We all get to end at some point. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and like I said, the fun thing I find with your designs is these large areas where you can develop a stitch. I am not a painted canvas stitcher. That's what I learned on early on because that's all that was available, but I am just not that. And when I look at some of these intricate works of art, these paintings, I don't even know how I'd stitch it other than basket weave.
Right.
And so when I see designs like yours where we have solid places where I can, I can do this stitch and I can stitch it for a while to develop a pattern, then right. That, that starts to appeal to me. Like this one where you just have a heart in a red field.
Yes.
And you know, some mindless stitching there, but you can develop a texture and a feel for it. And, you know, that starts to appeal to me.
Yeah. I mean, I think the hardest part about stitching my designs is figuring out what stitch you're going to do, because it's a stitch that you're going to definitely see. You know, it's not,
yes.
It's not a, like a little area of a canvas where you're just trying to fill in and you can put whatever stitch. Whatever stitch you use on my designs are going to be seen and they're going to be noticed. And they have to be perfect, because it's, if not, you notice the imperfections because it's such a large space. And it's all the same. So that's the hardest part for me. And especially, you know, like when I stitch myself, and I do this pretty much every time I start stitching, is I'll do 5 rows of a stitch and then realize I don't like how it looks and rip the whole thing out and start over. Which is another thing I get from my great grandmother. If her, you know, whether it was stitching or cooking or anything that she did, if it was not 100% perfect, she ripped it out or threw it away or anything. And, although I was very young when she died, I definitely think I got that from her. And so if my stitches, if I don't like the way they're looking, especially if it's next to another stitch, I rip it out and I start over. So most of the time when I'm stitching something, it's deciding which stitch I'm going to use.
Do you, when you do designs, do you start to see what stitches you use, even if you don't stitch them?
No.
No? Okay.
Not really. For my canvases that I've made into models, you know, when I sent them to be stitched, I had to send it with a stitch guide. So I did have to think of the stitches. And, you know, in retrospect, I probably would have picked different stitches had I known what it was going to look like. But it's hard to visualize sometimes. But, it is, you know, they look great. I love my models. And the people who stitch them for me are fantastic stitchers. And I think they turned out great. But had I stitched them myself, I probably would have picked different stitches.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, that's the art and the fun of it right there is,
yes.
Everybody views it differently. Somebody the other day was saying that, you know, the fun part was you could take the same thing and hand it to 5 different people and get 5 different looks guaranteed, even if they all use the same threads. So
it's funny because I have one design and I was actually speaking to a friend of mine who is a copyright lawyer the other day. And because, you know, these weren't things that I thought about when I started designing, because I never thought that my business was going to take off. And so I was on the phone with her and she was like, you know, one of your designs is copyrighted and I think you need to discontinue it. And I had just received a batch from the painting service where I had ordered 5 of those canvases.
Oh, no.
And I was like, oh, boy, I really guess I have to discontinue this. And my sister-in-law came over the next day and she saw, I have a model of that one in my house, and she saw it and she was like, oh my God, I love this. She's always asking me for needle points. Everything she thinks of, she's like, can you stitch that for me? So anyway, she saw the model and she's like, I want this. And I was like, well, funny enough, I'm discontinuing that model, so I will stitch one for you. And then I thought for my other sister-in-law, I would get one done for her as well. And I picked different threads for the two of them because they're very different people. They deserve different colors. And I sent them to be stitched. I didn't stitch them. And just the different threads, I can't remember off the top of my head if the stitches are the same or not. But just with the different threads, they look so different. It's amazing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. People who know what they're doing can really,
yes,
really bring things to life just with a different thread or a different stitch. It's so much fun. I don't have that talent, but some people do. So that's the ugly side of this business is running into copyright. So then I suppose you've got to start looking at copywriting all your designs.
Yeah. So,
sucks the life right out of things, doesn't it?
It really does. I used to just Google image things and then copy them and not care. And now that I spoke to this lawyer about it, I like can't even go on Google anymore. It's so sad. but, you know, it's easy for me to copyright things because most of my things are fonts that I'm using and not designs. As long as I buy the rights to the font, I'm okay to use them.
Yeah.
Instead of downloading my free fonts, now I have to pay a couple dollars, which is fine because I reuse fonts and, you know, I make them look different. But it, you know, it's not as difficult for me as for somebody who is designing images and maybe was, you know, not open to the copyright thing. So it's not so terrible. It's just costing me a little more money now.
Yeah. All those little things that cost money and chew up time and, You'd rather be designing. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Definitely.
So your designs, do you paint the first one and then once you get it, then send it out to have multiples painted, or how does that work?
Yes. So I, now that I use a painting service,
I got smart on that.
Yes, exactly. Yes. I paint one master copy, and sometimes I'll paint two because it depends. If I post it on Instagram right away and it's a hot design, then I always end up having to paint like five copies because people order them that day and I feel bad making them wait, you know, 8 weeks for it. So I always end up, you know, painting more than one, but I paint one and send the master copy to the painting service. And I, you know, and then I get as many as I order per design.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, trial and error, if I'm not sure how a design is going to sell, I'll post it on Instagram or on Needlepoint Nation, and I'll see what the response is. And then based on the response is how many copies I'll order of it.
Yeah, well, that's just it. And there's another example of where social media can be a real valuable business building tool, because you get that instant feedback and you don't go down a path that's going to waste your time and money.
Right.
And yeah, you can get a real sense rather quickly, you know, just, yeah. I got 50 likes in an hour. This must be, this must have something going on for it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Or if people are emailing me saying, how do I order this? Where can I buy it? I'm like, I'm definitely ordering 20 copies of that one.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. While I paint the ones for the people who want them right away.
Right.
Yeah. And that's the other thing. We're such a, want it now society anymore. But yeah, you feel that obligation. Oh, I better sit down and paint two or three and fill these orders. Yeah.
Yes. I have a customer who owns a shop and she's great. We've become almost friends in the last couple of weeks since I met her. And I met her through social media. She found me. I don't remember if it was Instagram or Facebook, or I don't even know how she found me, but she opened a shop and she calls me for all of her custom orders. And I swear to God, I get an email from her every single day saying, I have a question. Can you make this design for me? And every day I'm sitting staring at 11 canvases that I'm in the middle of painting for her right now. That she fills my time up completely with all of her custom orders. And I love it. It's great. And some of her custom orders I've added to my permanent designs because they're so cute.
Yeah. Speak about that. Yeah. Custom orders. Because I see posts frequently. Who can do this for me? I have an idea. I want one. Who can do it for me?
Yes.
And so it sounds to me like you're getting a pretty good stream of that.
Yeah. So for the people who post that in Needlepoint Nation, the Needlepoint Novelist always gets those. She's very popular in Needlepoint Nation, and I'm working to get my name in there so that people refer me also.
Me too.
Yeah, I'm here. Check out my website. I always comment back on those, even if there's 500 comments on that. You know, maybe somebody will look at my name and find me. But I started my business on Etsy doing custom work before I had a permanent collection. And that's basically all you'll find on my Etsy shop are custom designs. And it started with me, like I said, I made a pillow for my niece. I made one for my husband and I for our wedding with our wedding hashtag, which is definitely a new generation thing. I stitched our wedding hashtag. But actually,
okay, what is it?
Shayna found her babe because my husband's name is Abraham and we call each other babe.
Oh, that warmed my heart. That warmed my heart right there. Okay.
one of my friends that she knew my husband from day one as soon as we started dating, and she used to always say that he put the Abe in babe. And so that also, you know, came into it. But anyways, that's just me and my husband. I could talk for another 2 hours about that. Funny enough, we were in California on a trip right after we got engaged, when I was starting to stitch our hashtag pillow, and I ran out of thread. And so we were in San Francisco, and I told my husband, I was like, this is an emergency. I need to go get thread. I have no thread. that wasn't as big as the emergency when we went to Houston and I forgot to bring needles with me. That
oh, no.
Yes. but so we went to Needlepoint Inc. in San Francisco, and I walked in and Diane, the owner, was sitting there, and I showed her my canvas and I said, I need thread. I ran out of thread. Do you have this color? And she looked at it and she's like, this is so cute. Where did you get this? And I said, I designed it myself. And she's like, I'm in love with this. You need to design something for my store. And she was the first store that ever bought my designs.
Oh my.
Yeah. And so just by running out of thread, you know, I got my first real customer. You know, it was a disaster. I charged her retail prices, not knowing the wholesale market, and you know, it was just a disaster. But you know, I started to get my name out there a little bit. But yeah, I completely forgot where I was
That's
going with
quite
that
so you charged the shop retail. Oops.
Yeah, oopsies. But yes, that
That's a
was another thing.
little steep for a shop.
I know. Yeah, that was another thing I turned to Jessica for from Lysette. I was like, how do you know how to figure out your prices? And this was before she told me about a painting service and all this stuff. And she was like, well, I don't know. And she would always kind of beat around the bush about it. And I'm like, just tell me how much to charge, because I don't know what I'm supposed to be charging. And then once I found the painting service, the pricing made a lot more sense to me. And I finally, actually, funny enough, there's a shop that ordered for me. I think she was my second shop that ordered, and we also went back and forth for a long time about my prices, and she kept telling me my prices were too high, and you know that they weren't the right price, but that's what I imagined a wholesale price to be. And we finally decided on a price, and then she placed that order. A week later, she placed the second order, and I told her that she had to wait for the canvases from the painting service to come because I just placed that order. And in the meantime, I had figured out all my wholesale pricing, and it was much lower than my original invoice to her. And when I sent her the invoice for the second order, she was like, well, I see that you finally figured out what wholesale pricing is. And I was like, yes, these are the prices. It's not going to change anymore. So I finally felt like I was really, in the market now.
Yeah, but easier to do that when you have a tangible cost like the painting service
Right.
behind it, because that gives you a baseline.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's pretty standard, whatever the painting service charges you upcharge it a little bit, and that's standard. That's what everybody does. Just as, when the shops buy a wholesale from you, they upcharge it a little bit, and those are the retail prices.
Yeah,
That's
'cause
something I managed to figure out.
that's got to be really hard. Well, this one was just two letters, so it only took me a half hour to paint. So
Right.
I really feel like I shouldn't charge much. But this one I spent all afternoon, so I need more. Yeah, that's got to
Right.
be tough, and it's all your time, and that's hard to put a number to anyway.
Yes. And
And
then, the painting service, truthfully, I don't know how they do their numbers, but I think a big part of theirs is how many colors are included in it.
oh.
I think that's a big part of it as well, which is, for me, most of my designs are one color. Maybe two. So that's, yeah.
A little easier,
Yeah.
Is that finding a good painting service? Is that a challenge, or are they all pretty much?
Well, that's actually a sticky subject at the moment.
Oh, okay. Never mind. Never
Yes.
mind.
So I had just received my first batch from my painting service not too long ago, and it was a very, very, very large order. I mean, imagine I was about 35 designs in when I found out about a painting service. So I got everything done at once. And half of them came back great, and half of them came back iffy. But I was able to talk to the painting service, and I expressed my unhappiness with some of them, and they gladly took them back the next day, and they're rush ordering them for me, so I have them back in time for market. And they were very easy to deal with, and it wasn't like a back and forth, well, you did this and you said that, and it was very easy. So as long as it comes back up to par, I will continue with that service.
Well, yeah, and that's just it. You can't have iffy. It's, yeah.
Right. So that's what I told him. I said, this is hard for me because I'm almost embarrassed to sell some of these because I don't want my name to be on something that looks like this.
Right, and people get frustrated stitching them, and
Right.
then they get pushed aside, and your name's sitting
Yes.
right there. Yeah, well, that one, I had trouble with that. I couldn't tell where to
Right.
put the stitch. Yep,
And
exactly.
I'm very almost OCD about, if something's like, I have one design that it says chill pill and it's a circle. It's one of my popular designs. I had it stitched into a model, and I spent a lot of time charting out that circle to make sure it is perfect. And unfortunately, that was one of my models that came back from the painting service, and the circle was lopsided. And it really, really upset
Oh.
me. It really upset me because it's the first time I painted that one, I tried to take the easy way and just kind of trace a circle. And I showed it to my husband and he was like, you got to redo that and make it perfect. So when I saw that they didn't do it perfect, it really got to me.
Yeah. Well, and that's just it. When stitching is basically a grid,
right.
the circle, yeah, the circle's the challenge. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's actually not as challenging as people think it is.
But I mean, to stitch it is to have it look like a circle is, and get that pixelated look out of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I've struggled with circles before. That's a hard, but the bigger the circle, the less pixelated it looks.
That's, yeah.
That's what I'll say about a circle.
Okay. yep. So do you do much stitching yourself? I mean,
yes. So right now I'm, like I said, I'm not stitching anything at the moment because I'm preparing for market. But I have, you know, some stuff coming up in the future that I will be stitching a lot for, you know, my niece is turning 2 very soon and I would like to stitch her something every year for her birthday.
That's a tall order.
That's a tall order. I know, but I say that until I have more nieces and nephews. But for right now, she's my one and only. So I'm thinking about something to stitch for her. And I have a couple ideas in mind that I can't discuss yet. Top secret.
Yeah, of course. So is your stitching all needlepoint? Is that what you do?
Yes. I've done one cross stitch project before and I never finished it. I did not enjoy cross stitch. I've been curious about embroidery, hand embroidery, but I've never tried it. Needlepoint is, you know, that's where my heart is.
Right. Yeah. So how many new designs for the Dallas market?
I think I have 4 that I haven't painted, but I've already designed. And I have a couple more quotes that I have in mind. Funny enough, I also work a full-time job. Right now I'm a therapist and I actually gave notice at work and I'm quitting my job to focus more on my needlepoints.
Whoa, that's a leap. Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah. So that is my exciting news. My last day is on Tuesday. So I'm really excited to be able to focus 100% of my time on my needlepoints and hopefully really grow my business in the next year.
Wow. Congratulations. That's a big leap. Wow.
It is. And I, you know, it was a hard decision. It took a year for me to get hired at my job. I have a very hard position to get and, I gave it up pretty quickly, but I think it was the right decision.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's hard because you're leaving that security blanket of the guaranteed check and.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, but it's gotten to the point where, you know, I'm working an 8-hour day and my commute to work is an hour. So it's really a 10-hour day by the time, you know, I get home and everything. And then I'm coming home and I'm painting all night, and trying to be a housewife and all this, you know, stuff in between. And it was getting really overwhelming.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it is. Yeah, it just drags you right down. Yeah, and then you're not effective at anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you do have a husband.
Right, and we are newly married. We're, you know, under a year, so.
Oh, my, yes.
Right, so here I am, you know, I'm quitting my job, and I'm focusing on my husband and my needlepoints, my 2 babies.
Well, that's just heartwarming. No, that's fantastic that you're able to do that. Good for you. That's terrific.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. So you're, when it comes to market, then, you just need to have a design painted and then see what orders come out of it.
Right. So that for my new designs that I'm painting, you know, in the next couple of weeks before market, I will only be taking 1 of each design. And I don't think I'll do a cash and carry for those because I'll need to send those to the painting service after, assuming that I get orders, which I think I will, because I think all 4 designs that I have in my head that I'm ready to be painted, I think are going to be really big hits. And I think I'm going to keep them secret until Dallas. But I think they're going to be really, really big. So hopefully, you know, they're as big as I'm envisioning them to be and they'll sell really well.
Yeah, well, that'd be great. Yeah, that was Dallas was one place that Christine and I talked about getting to, but paying jobs are in the way. So we could, yes. like you, paying jobs are in the way. Yes, you know, exactly.
My job was actually trying to tell me a couple weeks ago that I couldn't take off those 2 days to go to Dallas. And I was like, oh, no, no, no. That is not working for me.
Watch me take them off.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Everything is paid for and I've been working for a year for this. So no, I am definitely going.
So when you go to the Dallas show, we had Debbie Woodard on a while ago, and it sounds like that show is a riot of fun and people and sales and everything else. So you have to put together a booth of some kind too, or just some means of hanging things up?
So it's my first year going, which I'm really excited about. But I have spoken to Kimberly from Kimberly and Needlepoint, who's gone a couple years. And she, the way that it was explained to me is that every designer or shop, not designer, that you reserve a room, and the rooms are suites. So there's a living room and a bedroom with doors in between that close them off. And so your living room becomes, you know, your booth more or less. And that's where you show everything. And so people jump from room to room. Mm-hmm. So you have to decorate your room. And, you know, every year there's a theme. This year, I believe the theme is like the 80s and groovy and disco and stuff. And I believe that people decorate according to the theme. You know, it's all new to me. I'm trying to figure it out as I go.
Well, that's what we understood from Debbie was that, yeah there's a theme. And disco would not be the 80s, by the way. But
70s? That's before my time.
Yes, yes. It's okay. Yeah. Just age me. Go ahead. Age me.
Sorry.
But it sounds like a great – that's why I really wanted to go is because it sounds like it's just a blast to go to that show.
Yeah.
And, so it's like the Nashville show then. You have your own suite, and so you can decorate it however you want. And, okay. All right,
and then I know there's another show in Orlando, which I'm going to try and go to as well, at the end of March. It's called the Spring Needlepoint Show. So I don't know. I don't know if you've heard of it. I just found out about it. I think it's smaller.
Yeah, that one I don't know about. Yeah.
Yeah.
But Orlando, if you don't go to the one in Orlando, you just go back to your therapy job because
I know I have no excuse to not go.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So do you have some goal for like, I want to turn out two or three new designs a month, or do you just let them flow? I mean, it sounds like you could do two or three a day if you had the opportunity, but
yes. So my goal right now, and I don't know how far of a stretch this is, but my goal for the show at least is to get into anywhere from 8 to 10 new stores. And other than that, when it comes to my designs, I get, you know, creative waves. So 1 week I think of 10 new designs, and every time I think of a design, I design it on my computer and I graph it out. And then when I'm ready to paint it, then I'll sit down and paint it. But I keep a file of all my new designs that I graph out. And sometimes, you know, I think of a design in my head and I go to design it and the fonts aren't working, or, you know, it's just not coming out the way I envisioned it. Mm-hmm. And I give up on that design. I'll leave the quote written down and I may come back to it at some point. But if it doesn't, you know, come out for me right away, then I usually go to the next thing. I don't force designs. So it really is, you know, an organic creative flow.
Yeah. Okay. Dumb guy here.
Yes.
On your website,
yeah.
In your gallery,
yes.
In the designs section, we have the three fingered, two thumbed hand with an eye. I see that design every now and then. What is that?
That's a Hamsa.
Bless you. What?
It's a Hamsa. Hamsa. It's the hand of God. It's a.
Oh.
I want to say it's a Jewish thing. I don't even know if it's a Jewish thing. I know I grew up with Hamsas. They kind of bring protection. And then in that design, there is a evil eye, which definitely protects you. I don't know if you know about the evil eye.
Nope.
But that, and I, you know.
It's a Hamsa. Hamsa.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm. Because, yeah, I've seen that, and I just never knew anybody to ask what it was, so.
Yeah, so that design actually, I can't remember if I designed it for me or for my best friend. And I designed it and I started stitching it. I have one that's half stitched. And when I decided that I was going to sell designs and not just do custom work, I kind of went through my, you know, my scraps of designs that I have done in the past and thought, what can I add to my permanent collection? And this was one of them. So this was something that I had designed for me or for my friend. I honestly can't even remember. I designed it so long ago. but this is the exact design. If you look at the one that's half stitched, it is identical to this one. So I thought that was pretty cool.
It's just unique and different, and I've seen it enough that I figured it must be some standardized thing. So,
One of my new designs, actually, I'll give you a little sneak peek, includes an evil eye.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay.
A different look, but it has an evil eye in it.
Okay. Well, I learned something. See, I learn something all the time. And then you have a section, acrylic boxes.
Yes.
Tell me what that is.
Okay, so that actually, my husband is always, you know, looking for Advil or looking for Tylenol or for some sort of medicine. And it was just always thrown all over my house. and I could never find it. I knew I had it and, you know, I could never find it. So then I would go to Walgreens and I would buy more. And, you know, we had just an overflow of Advil and Tylenol. And so I decided that I needed to get something to put all of our medicine in so that we always knew where it was. And I somehow, I don't know how I came up with the idea of an acrylic box, but I decided that I was going to stitch something that had, you know, the RX for medicine, you know, like that R with the long
right, sure.
leg and the X. That's my design that I had to discontinue because of copyright issues.
Oh.
I went to my needlepoint store because I knew that they had acrylic boxes there. And I went in and I saw the box and I said, what size does the design have to be to fit in there? And they told me it was a 5x5. And I went home, I stitched the design and I went to the needlepoint store and I brought them my design that was fully stitched. And I said, I want this acrylic box and I want this to go inside. The acrylic box was so expensive. I bought it anyways because I just stitched this whole design for it. And I said, you know what? I own a business. I have an LLC. I have a resale certificate. I need to find somebody that can make me these acrylic boxes because this could really take off. And I found a wholesaler that makes me my acrylic boxes for not expensive. And I started designing all different types of boxes. So in my house, I have my RX with all my medicine and I have the Band-Aid, but the Band-Aid is smaller. It's a 3x3. And then the bow, there's the bow design. That one was designed for my niece. I haven't stitched one for her yet, but my niece does not leave the house without a bow in her hair.
Oh.
And so the bow was inspired for her. And then I thought, you know, my acrylic boxes that I have here have little like knobs on top. And I thought, how cute would it be as a piggy bank? So then I designed one that says shit tons of money and 401k. And the shit tons of money I have is a model. And it's a white acrylic box, so you can't see the money that's inside of it. And it has a little slit on top that you can put coins in.
Okay.
Yeah. So those are, and then I have, you know, Got Junk, which is another one I thought of. I have one that says drugs instead of RX because that's not copyrighted. so yeah.
Yeah, somebody starts copywriting the word drugs, we got trouble.
Yeah, we have a big problem. So that's kind of, you know, where my acrylic boxes came from. I have like a whole shelf in my house dedicated to my acrylic boxes. I love them. I'm actually thinking of making a bigger acrylic box, but I can't decide what I'm going to put inside of it.
Okay.
Those are my dilemmas of the day.
So Wednesday morning, you get up, you have breakfast. What's your first day as a full-time designer going to be like?
I actually have an appointment with an accountant on Wednesday.
Oh, no, not that.
I know. I need to get my accounting under control before I go to market. But I plan on, like I said, I have 11 canvases staring at me as we speak that need to be finished painted. So that's number one that has to be done because I promised the shop owner I would get it out next week to her. And then I am painting all my designs for Dallas. I also, you know, I'm getting ready for Dallas. I have a bunch of other stuff. You know, there's more than just showing up with your canvases. You know, there's the decoration, and, you know, I got some little like goodie bags that I need to put together and stuff like that. So a lot of preparation for Dallas next week. My sister-in-law is I'm lucky enough to have her because she's going to help me prepare for everything. And my husband is helping me at the trade show, so he will be working for me all weekend. And I'm very excited. So yeah, just a lot of preparation.
Sounds like fun. Sounds like a great time. Yep. Yes. Well, thanks for doing this. We got time flies. Time flies when you do these things. You don't realize it. Yes. Boy, this is exciting time for you. That's just fantastic.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I'm really, really excited to see where my business will go.
Yeah, good for you. All right, Shayna, well, thanks for doing it and doing the show with us and showing us the inside of the painted canvas world. That's fun.
Yes, thank you for having me.
All right, thanks to everybody for listening, and Christine and I will be back on Wednesday.